Well, it's the interactive portion of the program. Justin Bamforth with us. We'll get your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back. George Norrie here. Justin Bamforth with us. His book is called The Spectrum. Justin, you have looked at the phenomena of things that disappear and reappear. I find that to be a bizarre situation, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. These disappearing and reappearing objects, apports, you know, it's very, very interesting. There was one, you know, that New Zealand woman that I was telling you about who had the experience with the strange joggers.
Yeah.
What she wanted to tell me originally was about these disappearing and reappearing objects in her life. It actually happened so much in her life that it really made her quite OCD about placing things in the same spots just to make sure she's not losing her mind and to keep track of it all. Recently, she sent me a 14-page list of all the strange things that have taken place in regards to this. And I tell you, I'm very impressed by her attention to detail and making these notes. One of the more extreme examples that she relayed to me was she was making some toast with marmalade and heating up coffee in the microwave. The microwave starts beeping that it's done. So she says, for reasons unknown, I was momentarily stressed that if I put the toast down, I wouldn't remember where it was. Huh. So she told herself, the toast is beside the toaster, as she put her plate down. She opens the microwave, takes out the drink, turns around. And this is just a few seconds later, she turns around, and the toast is now on the bench on the other side of the room.
Jeez.
And ironically, that is where she was already planning to go with her coffee and toast. But again, this plate had moved immediately as she turned back around. Now, again, could this be stress-induced? You know, she said she felt like her thoughts had been intercepted. It reminded me of something retired Colonel John Alexander mentioned to me one time, and he's mentioned in his books, too, that this phenomenon, it's precognitive, and it tends to anticipate what we're going to do before we do it. It's like it remains one step ahead of us. So I found that example to be very, very interesting.
And have you heard the story of keys that disappear and reappear in the same spot you put them in?
Yeah, this actually happened to this woman. But, you know, they appeared in her handbag after she had practically dumped out her handbag. You know, and what's really interesting is I have a report from a librarian who got my book in her county's library, Ocean County, New Jersey Library. And she placed the book down on a pile of books, on the couch. And normally she puts, like, you know, books in a pile, you know, by the couch. But this time she put it on the couch because she was going to take a picture and text it to another librarian. Well, when she puts it down, she turns around, turns back, the book is gone. She called someone else to help her look for this book. She spent an hour searching for this, and then sure enough, the book is now right next to the couch, and there it is. So it's like, what happened here? I have no idea.
Are there mischief makers on the other side, tricksters?
I think that is an aspect for sure, the trickster element. You know, when we look at, you know, how other... you know, cultures kind of like look at this phenomenon, you know, they do take into account this trickster aspect. And I think that can be at play in some cases. But again, this stuff also tends to have a bit of elusiveness to it. Like, it doesn't quite want you to know that it's doing it, but it wants to keep you guessing. So it's interesting.
Justin, what's your take of the June 25th UAP UFO report that came out by the government?
I think it's a step in the right direction for sure. It's, you know, it's not going to satisfy the appetite for most UFO enthusiasts, as, you know, and investigators are always looking for more. But, you know, I think it's a step in the right direction for sure. Again, you know, what I caution people is, again, take those preconceived notions and set them aside. Just because we're dealing with what appears to be the UFO phenomenon doesn't necessarily mean that is what's at play here. There could be other elements, other aspects of the phenomenon as a whole that are playing into this. Again, look at the classic definition of a UFO, right? People think that the occupants are coming from beyond the stars, outer space. Well, when you look at some of those videos that have been released to the media, those objects, and in those reports, those objects are coming into the, or going into the water and coming up out of the water. So again, what does that suggest? Well, maybe these things are within this world, this planet.
Maybe.
So again,
you can't rule that out.
Yeah, exactly. It's a possibility, but I don't think the answer is quite that cut and dry or that black and white.
What about the public perception of UFOs? What do you think?
Again, like, you know, what I was mentioning earlier with this notion that they're coming from beyond the star, the solar system. And again, we just have to, you know, put that on hold, right? I mean, consider that, you know, even the evolution of the aliens, right? I think Jim Mars put it best when he kind of looked at it like...
I miss that guy, by the way.
What were people describing these aliens as? You know, prior to the 1940s, they were witches and demons. 1950s to 60s, they came from Mars, from Venus. 60s to 70s, reports again a little more sophisticated. Alpha Centauri and Zeta Reticuli. 90s to the 2000s, it's another galaxy. It's a dimension. It's a time. It keeps evolving, and I think it's evolving with our society and, again, with what we expect these forces to appear as. Maybe that is how they're manifesting to us so that we can actually visibly see them.
Let's go to the phones. Brendan's with us in Austin, Texas, to get us started. Hey, Brendan.
Hey, thanks, George and Justin and everybody out there.
Thank you.
So I had a quick question. Have you noticed any patterns in the paranormal activity based on the cultural location of the area or to the heritage of the experiences? And I had two doppelganger experiences here, and I'm kind of in a German community, so it made me wondering about that.
Has location affected any of these sightings or any of these paranormal activities, Justin?
Yeah, it can, for sure. I mean, there are certain, you know, what are called window areas. I believe John Keel coined that term initially, where there are certain locations that have a bunch of activity, and then it suddenly the window closes, and then there's not much activity. Skinwalker Ranch is a perfect example of this, like, how the activity works on cycles. And it could be that in that community that this gentleman is referencing, you know, look at the time frame of when the reports are most active and when they're not as active. I would certainly be interested in learning more about the doppelganger experiences that you have, and feel free to, you know, reach out to me through normalparanormal.org.
Yeah, you do take a lot of stories. As a matter of fact, people have to have read your book, The Spectrum, and then they contact you with incredible stories with that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the number of stories that I get from people is just, it's incredible. And it's, again, don't worry about trying to classify it or categorize it. If it was a strange experience, I like to hear about it. Because chances are, you've had other strange experiences too.
Next up, we've got Bob in the city of Baltimore, Maryland. Hello, Robert. Welcome.
Oh, George, my God, it's so good to hear your voice.
Thank you, sir.
I've been listening to you for so many years. Anyway, I think this definitely falls in the category of paranormal. A couple of years ago, and I can remember the date, it was like August 15th, 2019. I'm outside doing yard work. In the middle of doing yard work, I'll make this quick. I'm humming a tune. I love music. So I like what you play. I love all that stuff. But I'm humming this particular tune that it doesn't make any sense to me. I've never heard it. I don't know what it was. But it sounded older. So I called someone that I knew at the time to ask and kind of let me know what it was called. And they had the title right off the bat. It was called Tragedy by Thomas Wayne and the Delons. It was from 1959.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was very interesting because I said, you know, I don't know why this thing is stuck in my head. Well, I go to look it up on a billboard, and at very week that I was born on April 10th, 1959, it was in the top five hit songs in the country at the time, which was weird. I thought that was interesting. I kind of went along. But later on, as the day progressed and it went on, and I was about ready to just kind of turn it down, I don't know why I'm gonna go do this. I've got to see what's going on with this. This is strange. Well, I go and I Google up Thomas Wayne Perkins. He was the younger brother of Johnny Cash's guitarist. And I go to Google it up, and on August 15th, 1971, he was killed in a car accident off an unfinished part of a road in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, geez. That's bizarre.
I knew nothing about this man. Knew nothing about him, knew nothing about this music. I had no idea. And it was, I'll never forget this. And I'll never forget the date. It was just crazy.
And did it ever happen again, these occurrences for you?
No. And he was like somebody that was so obscure, I would have never have known anything about him.
What do you think of the dead communicating like that, Justin?
Yeah, it's funny, right? Because, you know, like this, like you, like you were talking about, Robert, like, you know, why you, right? You had never heard of this person. You know, why did they single you out?
Out of the blue.
Yeah. You know, sometimes these messages come through from whatever realm is out there. Call it the other side, call it the beyond, call it beyond the stars, or whatever. There's no doubt something is coming through, and it singles out certain people. But perhaps the message wasn't intended for you, but maybe it was intended for somebody else. You know, like that 40-day story I was telling you about earlier. If Tina and Eric had not had the set of synchronicities that they had, they wouldn't have told me that story. They would have just, you know, blown it off, and I would have never had the opportunity to give them something else to think about. So, you know, again, take these messages not necessarily at face value what you think it is, but maybe look beyond it. Share it with other people. Get their take on it. You know, that's my best advice.
What do you mean, Justin, when you talk about the sixth observable UFO?
Yeah, so I thought this was really interesting. When I was doing my research, I came across an interview with Lou Elizondo, right, which
yep.
A lot of your listeners are familiar with.
They're sure. We talked about him last night.
Yeah. He outlined five observables with UAP phenomenon. Well, apparently there's a little-known sixth observable that Elizondo seldom mentions, and he said that his old team was more than reluctant to talk about. It's biological effects brought on by the phenomenon. According to an article that I came across in the New Republic, this sixth observable involved potential changes to the body and brain due to close encounters with these objects. More disturbingly, there was also a link to paranormal experiences. And according to Elizondo, the latter aspect was something that another ATSEP member dealt with after one particular mission, which involved books flying off the shelves. It was like a poltergeist. And it was so severe that police were called in to investigate. And according to Elizondo, there was an issue with ATIP service members to eventually qualify for service-connected disabilities based on things like demonic possession, poltergeist activity, or spontaneous close encounter telekinesis. To me, that brought to mind what John Burroughs was dealing with when he was trying to get treatment relating to whatever he encountered in the Rendlesham Forest during those infamous
pen orders. Right, and he had trouble getting treatment for a while.
Absolutely. You know, his medical report was classified. And it reminded me of so many other experiences that have been shared with me as well, you know, where they have a UFO experience and then things develop afterwards. The Shane Sovar case, which I talked about on your show a couple years ago, where he had a Men in Black encounter and that was caught on video. After he had his original UFO sightings, he had poltergeist-like phenomena break out in his house. One other, you know, Texas nurse who wrote to me detailing two close encounter UFO sightings she had a few years ago. One involved missing time, and another was with ill effects. It actually had her hospitalized shortly thereafter. You know, there's an aspect of this phenomenon that is very dangerous. And I always caution people, you know, when they're saying, oh, I'd love to see a UFO. Well, maybe you really wouldn't love it, especially if it causes these things.
Right. Well, you remember Close Encounters of the Third Kind? Richard Dreyfuss's face was all that, you know, like burned?
Yeah. Yeah, that you know, that happened in the Cash Landrum case, right?
So
you
thing.
Had three individuals there. And two of the women had a lot of burns similar to, radiation poisoning. So this does happen, and it's an underreported aspect of the UFO experience. Just look at some of the cases in northern Brazil, you know, that really terrified people and really scarred them, both emotionally and physically.
On the wild card line, let's go to Florida. Dude's with us. Hi, dude. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to meet both of you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm a searcher. I kind of live in the normal paranormal world, which makes it very difficult, but it does work for me. We're talking about Telly Savalas, and I called in basically to talk about the channeling the artists. Have you seen that video he produced?
I have not. How about you, Justin?
Yeah, the Australian TV show, right? I think that's what.
No. It's a movie. It's called Channeling the Artist. There's a guy in there called Gasparetto. He's from Brazil, and he draws blindfolded with his feet upside down and backwards.
I mean, jeez.
There is no way. And he's channeling like Da Vinci. He's channeling like Montigliano, whatever his name is. And they're beautiful portraits just like him. Telly Savalas is the...
announcer?
Yeah, the announcer, the guy like in... It guides you on to a whole bunch of different channels.
Right, okay.
So the one with Gasparetto is exceptional. In terms of timing, I've seen UFOs and crazy lady. Oh, look, take a picture. That's the, and I just so happened to have a Polaroid in there. It was. Got into, let's see, Bill Cooper. He took me on a long road, and I ended up doing my junior year in Rome and going overland through Afghanistan to India to see the Dalai Lama. So,
did you know Bill Cooper?
Huh?
Did you know him personally?
Who, Cooper? No, Cooper, I met him a couple times, and I communicated with him, but no, personally not, because he always had a crowd around him.
Yeah, that's right. Died in a shootout with police officers.
Yeah, they set him up, made a big, two detectives made a big brouhaha. He went out on the lawn. They tried to disarm him. He said he would never be disarmed.
Since you've been doing these paranormal cases, what dude for you has been the most dramatic?
Just that it works. I mean, it's got to be the point where I almost count on it, which is terrible. I went through a year or two of disorientation, and somebody said, well, you know, everybody goes through that. I said, I never go through that.
It does work indeed. Coming up to the break here, Justin, but how many people do you think percentage-wise have had a paranormal experience? I mean, truly of an encounter of the other side or UFO sighting. Do you think it's pretty high?
I think it's high in the sense that if somebody hasn't had a direct personal experience, they probably know of somebody who has. And I also want to thank Dude for sharing that, the channeling the artist. I wrote that down with Gasparetto. That's really interesting. I'll have to look into that.
Fascinating.
Thank you so much.
We're going to come back and take final phone calls in a moment with Justin Bamforth. His book, again, is called The Spectrum. His website, Normal Paranormal, that's it, normalparanormal.org. Linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We will return in a moment with Justin Bamforth and take final calls on Coast to Coast. Tomorrow on Coast to Coast, for the first 2 hours, our special on Afghanistan, how we got into that situation, how we got out of it, or did we get out of it, and what's going on. And then Lyd McTaggart joins us live from the United Kingdom to talk about intention experiments on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Justin Bamforth. Justin, what would you say is the strangest story you've encountered in your career?
Well, there's a lot of them. I will say this, probably the strangest story I've encountered recently in my career is the sniffing man of North Hudson Park, New Jersey.
What is that?
This one was sent to me by a couple of researchers named Mike Brown and Beth O'Brien. And they were on their way to investigate a classic UFO case known as the Stonehenge incident up in Stonehenge apartment buildings in North Hudson Park. This was in summer of 2019. And they were kind of like retracing the steps where this experience happened to this man named George Obarski back in 1975. As they approached the spot where a UFO reportedly touched down and numerous small entities were seen, the GPS on their phone started to malfunction in ways similar to how George Obarski, the original witness, had experienced when this UFO was present. You know, he had radio interference in his car, and here these two newer investigators are experiencing GPS interference on their phone. Then after that experience, they decided to get out. They're just hanging by the park, again, where this craft was seen, and out of nowhere, a shorter, pale-looking man runs up, again, this walking funny mannerism, starts sniffing Mike and Beth like a bloodhound, and then the odd character suddenly walks really fast out of sight. And again, the way that they're describing this individual, very similar to these strange people encounters, these MIB sightings. And they have no idea why they were sniffed. It was, you know, it's comical, but in the moment, they're really disturbed by this. And what's more disturbing is these are trained investigators. They would normally follow that individual, find out who he is, where is he going. They would go to the source of the strangeness. In this case, they were just so perplexed by it, they just sat there as if, like, nothing happened, and they were just bothered by it. It's very weird. So that's one of the stranger cases.
Interesting take. Let's take final calls. We'll go to Jason in Olympia, Washington, to get us started. Hello, Jace. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I had a curious event in my life when I was a young man. And I say young as a very young man. When I was 4 years old to five, I saw a unique event happen in my life when I was in my bedroom and the window slid open, and there were three men in black suits. And telepathically, I knew that they communicated with me, and I was so scared. I ran into my parents' bedrooms crying and screaming, and it was so terrifying. And I was wondering if Justin knew anything about this in any way that you guys could at least confirm something that would make me feel better as a you know, a grown man now.
Sure. Did they look human to you, Jason?
It was so scary. It was terrifying. The only thing that I remember now, and I'm 41 years old now, the only thing that I remember now is that they had no faces, but their bodies were as human bodies. They had shoulders, heads, and faces and hats. They wore the old kind of fedora hats. And that was what was so scary and so terrifying.
When you told your parents about this, what did they say or do?
It was so scary. They told me, when I ran into their room, they told me to go back to sleep.
Oh, they thought it was a dream or something, huh?
Yes, sir. Yeah, no, 100%. They thought it was a dream. Now that I'm 41 years old as a grown man, you know, I look back on to it as a man, and it's just, you know, that wasn't a dream.
It's weird. What do you think? What can you say to comfort him, Justin?
Well, first off, Jace, I just want to say thank you for having the courage to kind of, tell that story. I mean, George, you can tell by the tone of his voice, you know, he's struggling.
It still bothers him, sure.
Absolutely. Jace, I'd love to interview you further about this. I have a feeling you've You may have had some other experiences. Maybe your parents have had other experiences. You mentioned these men in suits, they had no face. Here's an example of something that kind of crosses over, you know, into this high strangeness category. I've heard from individuals who have the ability to see the deceased or what appear as the deceased, in reality. They have also described that when they see these people, that they also have no face. So, you know, did you see an aspect that kind of has paranormal implications in the sense of, you know, ghosts or deceased individuals? I don't know. But I find that commonality very, very interesting, or rather that pattern. The fedora hats thing, there's also a phenomenon. I apparently experienced it as a kid, according to my mother, the hat man phenomenon, where a lot of very young children will see an individual wearing a hat at the foot of their bed or in their bedroom, and, you know, they'll be completely black, very similar to these MIB reports. Could it have been aspects of that? Could it have also been, you know, maybe a possible screen memory of alien abduction? You know, I don't know. I don't want to jump to conclusions here. That's why I'd like to interview you further, and let's see what we can find. But again, thank you for taking the time and having the strength to share that story with me.
Give out your email, Justin, if you would.
Yeah, sure. It's info@normalparanormal.org. That's info@normalparanormal.org. And again, people can also go to the website as well, and there's a contact form on there.
Next up, let's go to Richard in Alaska. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Great.
Hey, I got a quick question. I live up here in Alaska, and back in the 73, 72 era, I don't know if you guys all remember this, but you guys remember when the refineries, they tried to kick up the production and stuff, and all of a sudden they had these, and their hydrocrackers, you know, they're about 90 foot in diameter, and they got, you know, lights on them, you know, in case the airplanes fly over and stuff, so the airplanes can see them. Well, the lights are lit by cesium-137. Well, when they boost up production back in those days, those things would overpressure those vessel tankers, and it would blow the top off. And those tops weigh, you know, as much as 90 million pounds.
Wow.
And they would find them, you know, 50, 60, 70 miles, 80 miles apart. And, and nowadays, I do inspection work on them now. But we haven't had, you know, it has had no sightings in years because of that. Only reason I learned of it, because they taught us in class of what happened, you know, back in those days. And a lot of people report those as UFOs and stuff like that. I mean, I believe there's UFOs because, you know, anytime there's an identified flying object, it has to be an UFO. But I was just wondering if you ever did your research on that, and what did you come up, you know, what did you think about that? And, nowadays we use special codes when we do our inspection work where none of these, you know, could happen. You know, when they pressure them up, they won't explode.
All right. Well, it sounds like some kind of UFO altercation, doesn't it, Justin?
Yeah, I had a little bit of a tough time trying to hear on the phone there what Rich was saying. Did you pick up much of it, George?
It's like they moved objects that there's no way humans could do it.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, again, it's so easy to, you know, speculate on stuff, and especially with this topic, right? Like, we just don't know. You know, I wish I had answers, but again, I'm right there with you. I just don't know. But something is happening for sure.
Too many people are seeing too many strange things.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on the cattle mutilation stuff?
Well, that's a very real thing. It's a very disturbing thing for sure. And it goes beyond cattle. You know, there's all sorts of animals that are being mutilated. And I wonder, you know, again, this gets into a disturbing aspect, but are there human mutilations? that are connected to the UFO subject. You know, I mentioned earlier the in northern Brazil had a whole bunch of cases that was covered by one particular researcher. You know, I encourage your listeners to look into those cases. That'll keep you up at night. There's a very dangerous side to this. And, you know, people who think that these are all love and light beings, well, maybe there are. But in human society, there's good people and there's bad people. You know, I think we'd be naive to think that there weren't negative forces at play in this realm as well.
Next up, let's go to Lawrence in Delaware, first-time caller. Lawrence, go ahead, sir.
Yes, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Yes, sir. You called it.
Yes. Oh, hi. First-time caller. Nice to speak with you.
You too. Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was calling also mainly an experience I had about a couple months ago. Interesting, strange.
What happened to you?
So it was just me and my brother in our house. I am in my room, and then he is in the basement playing video games. Next thing you know, it's quiet. I hear a loud crash, and I don't know what it is. Maybe somebody dropped something. So then I go in the kitchen, and next thing you know, I have a glass table, and it's shattered in pieces.
Jeez.
Like, it was weird. Like, nobody was around.
Nobody there. Wow.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, shattered in pieces, in small pieces, too. Like, you know, even the structures that was holding it, came down. I don't know what that was. Like, it was something.
Was there something on the table that may have broken through or something?
Well, at first I might have thought maybe we had candles there, like candles, yeah, but we've always had that for nearly a year, so I doubt it. But it was weird. That never happened to us.
Jason, what do you think, Justin?
Yeah, so two things come to mind. One thing is this element of and I know this isn't what you are experiencing, Lawrence, but it kind of reminds me of it. These phantom breaks. Or these phantom crashes or whatnot. There's a gentleman in New Orleans.
You get reports of those?
Absolutely. There was a guy in New Orleans who he had some haunting experiences in his residence. And one of these, he was outside of his home, and he heard this loud crash from inside his home. And it sounded like the window had broken and everything had just fallen apart in this one room. He goes up there, nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I've heard that with other reports, too. It's not quite as common, but it definitely happens. These strange, like I said, these phantom crashes. What is that? I don't know. But, Lawrence, I would think about, again, your state of mind before you heard this. You know, were you stressed out? Were you, you mentioned you're playing video games, I think, with your brother. Like, what was your mindset in this moment? Maybe there's a connection right there. I brought up stress earlier, and you know, I kind of call this a stress-induced psychokinetic discharge, or SIPD. It's just a term I made up for to kind of describe this sort of stuff. There was a woman named Emma who had a similar experience, and I wrote about her in the book. But when she got stressed out, she would actually physically affect things, and it really was perplexing. Like, her car would just randomly break down. She took it to a mechanic repeatedly, and the mechanic could never find out what was going on, but she would always be stressed out when she was driving this car. Well, after a while, the mechanics stopped calling her back to tell her car was ready. Why? Well, she found out afterwards that it wasn't because they were rude, but the phone lines at the repair shop would inexplicably stop working right after her call. She was affecting things. This followed her throughout her whole life.
It reminds me of that Carrie movie when she would, you know, burn things with her temper.
Yeah, it's a very real thing, and I think a lot of people, they may experience this, but they might be afraid to talk about it because, again, how will other people view them then?
Justin, keep in touch with us. Let us know about your travels, okay?
Absolutely. It was is a pleasure, George. Thanks for having me back on.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.